morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Today, we're talking to Linda Siegel. The legislative session is coming up, and Linda Siegel is the one who gives us our legislative updates every year, and today is the day where she provides us with a whole hour of information about what to expect and what's going on in the upcoming legislative session. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte. Thanks for having me on again this year.
It's great to have you back. I'm so glad that you want to come back every year and let people know what's going on.
Absolutely.
So this year, and it's interesting, we've been doing this for, I think this is the fourth year that you and I have been really looking at the legislature together here on the radio. And it's just amazing how different it is from year to year. Some years we have budget surpluses, other years money's really tight. This is one of the years where the budget is going to be quite tight.
That's right. And not even more than tight, we have a huge deficit projected for the current fiscal year and also for the new fiscal year, which begins July 1, 2009.
And so what is the legislature's job in dealing with that?
Well, of course, the legislature has to develop the budget for the entire state. And as a state, we can never not balance our budget. The federal government, as we know right now, is spending trillions of dollars that we don't have. But in a state, especially like New Mexico, we have to have a balanced budget every single year. So we have to pay all of our expenses.
So we can't sell bonds to China.
No, we can't. We could sell them for other things, but not for operating costs.
Right. So there are various people who are making budgets, the legislature and the governor's office.
Right. Every year, the administration, the governor, whoever that is, they develop their version of the budget. And every year, the Legislative Finance Committee, which is made up of members of both the House and the Senate, Republicans and Democrats, they make up their own budget. And then both of those budgets get discussed and negotiated, and pieces of one may go in the other, and the things can be changed. So it's a good process, and everybody gets their input.
So it's one of those typically American processes of coming up with various things, negotiating until you reach a compromise.
Yeah, pretty much.
And so what are we actually looking at this year when we have a budget deficit? Are we looking at, for example, cutting everything X percent across the board? Are we looking at cutting entire programs?
Well, it's interesting because both the legislature and the governor have come out with their detailed projections of what they want to see happen. And actually, Wednesday, this very day, the Legislative Finance Committee will be hearing a new revenue report, which could tell us that we have even a bigger deficit than we have. But they each have their own approach, but in actuality, the way the budgets are right now, the governor's budget, the legislator's budget, they're very close, within the $20, $30, $40 million of each other. But where they cut is a little different.
Where do you know yet are these cuts expected to happen?
Well, for example, in education, which is, when you add public education and higher education, it's almost 60% of our total state budget, the two of those together.
That's why we're so well educated.
We wish. And in the governor's version of the budget, he's proposing like an $80 million cut to education. That's to public education. And then the Legislative Finance Committee, there's a $40 million cut. So they're really very close, because we're talking about a $2.5 billion budget for the public education department. So a $20, $40 million difference is not that much. And they each cut different things a little bit, and we'll just have to see how they manage to come to agreement on that.
Now, let's say you cut, for example, the budget of a university or of a high school or whatever. Does the president or principal of that school then say, okay, we're going to fire 3 janitors, 2 teachers, and give them ketchup for lunch instead of sandwiches? I mean, where are decisions made about what actually, how it affects students?
Well, that's a good question, because the legislature says and the governor says, okay, here's how much money you've got. And then the school districts have to look at, okay, what are we going to cut? If this amount of our money is going to be cut, then who are we going to lay off, or what bill aren't we going to pay or encumber? And everybody's got to decide on their own. Now, one of the things that the governor was proposing to save some money was to, last year the legislature passed an additional day of school. And the governor's saying, well, that costs $14 million. Let's get rid of that additional day of school.
Hey, all they'd have to do is get rid of 40 days of, no, less than that. Just get rid of a few more days of school. I don't think there would be a student outcry.
I'd kind of doubt it, yes.
So we're talking to Linda Siegel. So, okay, so education will inevitably, one way or the other, get cut in New Mexico, and it remains to be seen how that will actually play out. What else?
Well, in higher education, they'll have a 2% cut. One of the things that I think both the governor and the legislature have said is no salary increase. Mm-hmm. No salary increases for state workers, for school workers, for higher ed. There's no salary increases. And, of course, every year, pretty much, the legislature, the governor, give across-the-board salary increases of 2%, 3%. So there won't be any of those. We're looking at Medicaid cuts, and the details of those are really on the table, but both the legislature and the governor are proposing somewhere in the vicinity of 40 to 50 million in Medicaid cuts, I believe.
Medicaid cuts, that's heavy duty.
Yeah, well, It's a program that insures about 25% of our population in this state, and so do we cut provider rates? And we already have providers who are saying, you know, we're just not getting reimbursed enough because Medicaid reimbursement rates are low, as are Medicare.
Right.
And then we have people who might not be eligible anymore for Medicaid. Actually, in the special session, the legislature added about $20 million to increase the number of kids on Medicaid. Well, that's not going to happen,
right?
Because the money just isn't there. So the Medicaid department has to look at where, once they get the word about how much they've got to cut, just exactly where are they going to cut it? Are they going to cut different kinds of benefits? Like one proposal on the table is to cut physical therapy and occupational therapy to all adults. Well, what do you do if you need rehab? So we don't know exactly what those cuts will be, but Medicaid will be cut.
Have there ever been studies done in any state that you know of what actually happens, like, you know, a year later to the population when you've cut their health insurance benefits in this way?
Well, what we do know is that more and more people end up in hospital emergency rooms. And so the burden then shifts from government, because they're not paying for it anymore, to those hospitals, which suddenly have a much bigger burden because of all this unreimbursed care. So we know that, and that happens every time there are cuts like these. The uninsured population, which is about 26-27% in this state, uses the emergency rooms,
right,
because they don't feel they have any place else to go.
And getting primary care in an emergency room is just that's not what they're set up for.
No. And of course, a lot of hospitals have created these diversions where they have an urgent care right next door, and if someone comes in, it's not an emergency, they'll shift them over to their urgent care. But if they don't have money to pay, they still don't get reimbursed.
We're talking to Linda Siegel. Okay, education, health, it's looking bleak. Help us make it look even bleaker. What else?
Well, one of the big areas that that both the legislature and the governor are looking towards to help fill the gap in what today we're hearing is a $450 million deficit in this fiscal year. So one of the things they're looking at...
The fiscal year is half of last year and half of this
year.
Right.
It runs July 1 to June 30th. And one of the areas they're looking to make up some cash to help take care of that deficit is through prior capital outlay projects. Now, you may remember we talked about this on the show in 2007 when we were, like, just floating
in capital.
Yes.
We talked a lot about bacon and other pork products
yes.
at that time.
Yes. And we had that year $900 million in capital. And so what happens is a lot of that gets out. Every legislator gets a little pot of money, and the governor gets money, and then there are statewide projects. So things get allocated every year. And sometimes it takes 3 or 4 years to accumulate enough money to actually finish a project. So if you have a $20 million project and you have to spend 3 or 4 years getting $4 million a year, $5 million a year, then you don't have enough money to actually do the project until the fourth year.
Mm-hmm.
So there are lots of projects out there that aren't complete, that there isn't enough money to finish them, so that money is just sitting there. And we desperately need that money. So the governor is proposing that we take about 260 million of those unfinished projects and reallocate that capital money.
And so you just leave that roof off of that unfinished senior center.
That's right.
And hope it doesn't rain.
You know, hopefully it's projects that never got started.
Okay.
But, I mean, who knows? Now, the difference is the governor wants the $260 million. The legislature's saying, well, we don't really think there's that many projects that we need to reallocate. So their number is more like $150 million. So they're going to have to reach a compromise on how much they're going to reallocate.
Isn't it funny how in years when you have a lot of capital, a lot of extra capital, it just seems like it's going to be that way forever.
Right.
You really don't think about putting at least half of it away for future years where you're going to be short.
Yeah, now one of the things that we have done over the last few years, and the governor is really pressed for this, is having a lot of money in reserves. So when I first started working doing lobbying in the legislature, there were some years when we would only have 5% of the total state budget in our reserves or even less sometimes. And this last year we had 6%, I mean 10%. So we have $600 million in reserves, which the idea is for reserves is that you dip into that if you need to when you come upon a bad year. Unfortunately, we're looking at a number of bad years in a row probably.
Right.
So
if we spend it all now, that would be very unwise.
Right, right. So that's why they're looking to capital to use to help shore up some of that deficit, and then we'll be looking for capital probably next year.
So basically, this is going to be a process of making a lot of difficult decisions, and everybody is going to be trying to get their project, the one that is saved, or their program.
Absolutely. That's why you have lobbyists.
That's why you have lobbyists. So, of which you are one. We haven't talked about that part of your work, and you're a lobbyist for nonprofit organizations.
Yeah, mostly nonprofit health associations, nursing groups, dietitians, occupational therapists, cancer society, child care providers. So a lot of the good causes, I like to say.
And a lot of this, for example, Medicaid cuts would affect the people who you are
absolutely,
working with.
Absolutely. Affecting the providers as well as the clients and the patients they serve.
Exactly. So, okay, we've got budget cuts. We've got a lot of people who are going to be fighting about it and making very difficult decisions. And those decisions in about 2 months will have been completed, and we will have to live with that. What is the, for example, in the budget process, which very quickly, even talking to you on the radio here, becomes, you know, your eyes can glaze over when you start talking about these numbers, and it's difficult sometimes, I think, for the public to really get a handle on it, and perhaps even the legislators themselves to get a handle on it. What is the public's ability to influence this process?
Well, I think it's very important for the public to weigh in and for constituency groups to weigh in, and they have lots of opportunities to do that. There's this terrific website, the legislative website, where you can go in and look at bills, you can find out who your legislators are, get their phone numbers, their addresses, their emails, And it's
that
and
website is one of the most organized and professional things that the state of New Mexico has ever done, and not to belittle anything else they've done, but it's an awesome website.
It is. It's amazing. And when I think that 15 years ago it didn't exist, and if you wanted a bill, you had to walk down to the Capitol and go to the bill room and buy a hard copy of the bill. And
right.
Now it's like all right there. The committee schedules are there. So it's a very useful website, and you can find out lots of things by going on it. And one of those things is how to contact your legislator and how to track bills and find out what bills are being introduced. So I encourage everyone to call your legislator's office, to send them an email. And of course, it's always important to try to, if you've got a really hot topic that you want to talk to a legislator about, they're all volunteers, go and meet with them before the legislative session starts, before it's crazy and hectic.
Now, the legislative session starts next week on Tuesday, the 20th of January.
That's correct.
Inauguration Day.
Yes, yes.
At the beginning of the session, it's likely that legislators, even though the session has begun, will have a bit more time for the public than they will at the end of the session when nobody sleeps and coffee sales go way up.
Absolutely. Because the first couple of weeks, things are kind of slow. Bills are just getting introduced. Not that many committee hearings happen. And it's just a good opportunity, if you can find a parking place, to go up and go see your legislator.
Now, this is all happening here in Santa Fe, the capital of New Mexico, and it's also important, besides going for the public, besides going to see their legislators, to show up at committee hearings.
Absolutely.
What happens when a group of concerned citizens shows up at a committee?
Well, normally what happens, the bill will be presented by whoever the sponsor is, and there may be expert witnesses, and then the chair of the committee will say, okay, how many people in this room are here to support this bill? And people raise their hand. And how many people are here to oppose this bill? People raise their hand. And then usually the chair will say, okay, people in the audience, stand up and tell us what your opinion is. And people will talk normally for a short period of time, and everyone gets an opportunity.
So when a bunch of people show up and they, you must have seen this quite a bit, when people do show up, that actually can sway the way a bill goes.
Well, now that's another question. Sometimes legislators can be somewhat influenced by testimony. Oftentimes what happens is it helps legislators feel better about what they're already
what
decided.
What they already had decided.
Right, okay, there's 40 people in the room and they're supporting my position. Oh, good, and there's only 10 opposing it.
Well, you are a legislator who is thinking in one way, but maybe you're a little on the fence, but you mm-hmm. definitely have kind of made your decision, and then 100 people come in on the other side. Do you see people saying, gee, I think I'll change my mind, or not so much?
Not so much. Usually legislators have been talked to before the hearing by the advocates or whoever's supporting or opposing the bill, and they kind of know how they're going to vote. Now, there are occasionally people who are like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. And so sometimes strong testimony can help that.
So really, the choices that we make and the action that we take, a lot of that takes place on election day.
Absolutely. By sort of the philosophies of the people that you elect. And then I can't underscore enough that people need to meet with their legislators before the session starts and get these legislators understanding your issues, because some of these issues...
We should have done this show 2 months ago.
Right, maybe next year.
Yeah.
One of the things that some of these issues are so complicated, you can't expect people to understand every single issue that comes before the legislature. So they rely on lobbyists, they rely on experts to tell them, well, this is what the truth is.
I think there's probably a lot more of that than people even realize, because we've discussed this a little bit. There are bills whose entire content is scientific or technical stuff,
right.
And nobody except people who are trained in that subject can even understand it in the first place.
Absolutely. So it is important. A lot of this new energy stuff is very scientific and complicated, and so then you're voting on your philosophy, perhaps. But the more people understand, the more legislators understand an issue, the better the decision making is going to be.
We're talking to Linda Siegel about the upcoming legislative session. So let's talk about something that happened on Election Day, which is that we elected a whole bunch of new legislators.
Yes.
How does it look? I mean, does it feel different? Do we have a more progressive legislature than we did last time around?
Well, actually, we do have some, particularly in the Senate, some new, very progressive legislators that actually replaced some conservative Republican legislators, and that will a particularly interesting one is Leonard Lee Rawson, who is from Albuquerque, from Las Cruces, a very conservative senator, who was beat by Steve Fishman, who is a pretty progressive guy, but who has a good business background,
right,
which is important to people in Las Cruces and everywhere, for that matter. And then in Albuquerque, we had we have four new senators from Albuquerque, all pretty progressive, two replacing conservative Republican senators. So there is an opportunity for some change.
Where do you think we'll see that change? I mean, is it mostly environmental things that you think will be affected by this group of more progressive legislators?
I think that's one area. I think the domestic partnership bill is probably another area where we could use a couple more votes and now probably have those votes. Choice issues, although that's a tough one.
Do we have choice issues up on this year's legislature?
Oh, I'm sure that parental notification will be introduced again.
Uh-huh.
And you never know what's going to happen.
So people, although the issue was decided in 1972 on a national level, it is still alive and well in the minds of people who are trying to basically wipe out a woman's right to choose an abortion.
Right.
So what else? So let's talk for a moment about the domestic partnership bill that's coming up. This is something that every year comes up and every year gets shot down.
And actually, it has passed the House of Representatives three times, twice in one year, and never passed the Senate.
Uh-huh.
So the Senate has been the sticking point for that bill. And of course, that's a bill that provides same-sex couples and opposite-sex couples an ability to get some protections, benefits, duties, obligations that you would normally get from marriage, but it's not marriage. You go down to the county clerk just if you were going to get as if you were going to get a marriage license, but you get a domestic partnership certificate, and then you have many of the same responsibilities and obligations of a person who's
you just
married.
Don't have to promise to love them forever.
Well, I think you're supposed to do that too, but I don't know. And that's a good point, though, because if then you become domestically partnered through the certificate with the state, then if you want to separate, you have to get a divorce or you have to get a domestic partnership dissolution.
Oh, so is that the same thing as getting a divorce?
Yes. Yes, you
very
have to
interesting.
Go to district court.
Except that they have probably a different set of paperwork. With a different title on the
different
top.
Different title, yeah.
So what are some of the rights and responsibilities that domestic partners have under the bill as it's being introduced?
Well, some really important ones are inheritance rights. If you're married now and you die without a will, the statute determines who gets your money. And the same thing would be true for a domestic partner. The statute would say, okay, this much goes to the domestic partner, this much goes to the child, the parents, whatever. That's a protection that really helps people that can't afford or don't do wills. Visiting partners in the hospital, making health care decisions. It's just assumed now, if you have a spouse and you go into a hospital and suddenly you can't make the decision for yourself, that they're going to turn to the spouse to say, okay, operate, don't operate, do whatever.
Pull out the plug, don't pull out the plug.
Right, right. And if with the domestic partnership, then the domestic partner would be able to make those decisions. There's hundreds of of small benefits that we take for granted with children. The ability for the child to be the child of both domestic partners.
Right. So if a child is adopted, or if one partner has a child,
yeah,
then both of them, if in other words, let's say two women are together and one of them gets pregnant through sperm bank, whatever, has a child, if they're domestic partners, is the other partner automatically a co-parent?
Well, I think they've got to do a second parent adoption.
Okay.
But that would make that much easier to be the co-parent, because you are in reality.
And so this is a bill that's had a lot of support. It's gotten through the House and on the Senate. Has it always been a close vote? In other words, is there a better chance this year with those, the changes that you were talking about that happened on Election Day, of this actually getting passed?
Right. The Senate has always been one vote away.
One vote?
Right.
How many people are in the Senate and the House of Representatives?
There's 42 senators who serve four-year terms, and 70 House members who serve two-year terms. So we just finished an election in 2008 where all 112 legislators were up. And then in 2010, only the House will run.
Right. So it looks good for that.
It looks decent for that.
Let's look at some of the other bills that are being considered this year. I imagine that there's quite a bit of environmental legislation.
Well, there's certainly some hot issues, particularly around oil and gas.
Yes.
And we already know that there's going to be an oil and gas preemption bill. And what that means is that the legislator that's carrying that will introduce a bill that would prevent, say, the city of Santa Fe, the county of Santa Fe, to pass laws that are more restrictive than the state laws, which our county has done. So
this is a reaction to what's happening around Santa Fe Galisteo area.
Absolutely. And if that bill were to pass, then the county ordinance would be automatically repealed.
And so I imagine there will be quite a bit of activism around not letting this oil and gas preemption bill pass. Are there any bills that would do the kind of legislation that they're actually already doing on a county level?
I haven't heard any of that type of bill being introduced. I think at least right now we're at a county to county level, and we seem to be one of the big counties in jeopardy of that. So that's one that people should really come to the Capitol for those hearings and pay attention to where that bill is so that it can be killed.
And we will talk about that probably on this program as time goes on. It's a 60-day session. It goes from January through March. And so we will be talking about all this, all of these issues as they come up. And unfortunately, they do tend to come up a lot at the end. And as we've said, why people can't, it just seems to be human nature that we can't just pace ourselves to do a lot of stuff at the beginning, but we never do. Let's talk about education. There is the question of how education is funded, the so-called funding formula.
Right. The public education department and the legislature, allocated like $1 million 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, and a study committee was put together with these experts from out of state and thoroughly researched our current funding formula and looked to the schools and school personnel and experts and teachers and superintendents to get an idea of what the schools really need. And the results of this funding formula, which have been introduced in the legislature last session, indicate that we are underfunding our public schools by about $360 million a year. And of course, here
which is even more than we're going to already cut them in the upcoming.
It's more than we're talking, you know, if we're talking about cutting $40 to $80 million.
Right.
But part of the idea of this new funding formula is to get rid of a lot of the little bitty categories that get funded and try to focus school districts on the funding areas where they need, like if they have a high number of English learners, if they have a high poverty level, there's a factor in there that they would get money. And what this funding formula does is it gives the schools larger pots of money and says to the school district, to the school board and the superintendent, okay, here's more money. Spend it where you need it. Do you need more special ed teachers? Do you need more English learner teachers? Do you need more food programs? You figure it out. Do you need more school nurses? You figure it out and you spend it where you think. And so all the school districts are, except Los Alamos, which would lose money under this funding formula, all the school districts are really happy that finally that the legislature and hopefully the public are seeing that, oh yes, we have been underfunding our schools and we need to inject $360 million new into the school
district. But how are they going to do that if they're cutting them?
Well, that's a really good question and I don't know the answer.
Gross receipts tax.
Well, that is the proposal that will be attached to this bill, at least that's what we've heard so far. That an increase of 1% in gross receipts tax would be attached to this bill, and that would be a statewide gross receipts tax, so everybody's gross receipts tax in every county and city would go up. And then that money would go into an education fund to fully fund this new funding formula.
It seems like there's always little bitty increases on the gross receipts tax. A mill here, 2 mills there. 1% is a pretty heavy-duty rate rise in the gross receipts tax.
Well, it's a penny for every $100, I think.
It's a penny for every dollar.
Penny for every...
1%.
1%, yeah. It is significant. It is going to be controversial in a year when we don't know where the money's coming from to fund anything, really. To fund a lot of our deficits, but it's also going to be popular in many circles.
Right.
Now gross receipts tax is a regressive tax because poor people and rich people alike have to pay gross receipts tax. And
whatever happened to that old idea of taxing the wealthy?
Well, we repealed most of that in New Mexico.
And does it ever occur to them to actually raise taxes on those who feel at least?
I think there was some discussion from the legislature into looking at some of the taxes that we've repealed in the past. But I will have to see.
That's unpopular because nobody wants their taxes raised.
Right, right. That'll be another one to watch.
So what else? There's some health care reform bills?
Yeah, there's always health care reform. So far, we've had a couple of years of quite a few health reform bills and nothing has ever passed, but I know the single payer, the Health Security Act will be introduced again, and that's they don't like me to call it single payer, but it's a bill.
It's a kind of in the same category as single payer.
Yeah, it's a bill that for the first year would be studying the issue in New Mexico, but the idea of it then, if the study comes out all right, is that then there would be an entity created separate from government, like a non-governmental agency, that would run all the health insurance. And there'd be no more health insurance from all these multiple private providers. It would just be done through one payer source.
And the way the numbers are run is because, if I remember correctly, because we've talked about this on this show in the past, because of cutting out the profit, you actually say their money is saved for the state and for the citizens.
Profit and administrative overhead.
That's
because
right.
If you've got multiple entities with their own administrative overhead and profit, then you've got...
Right. So instead of 10 insurance companies or 30 insurance companies each having their own entire management structure, you have one.
Right, right. And, you know, the biggest example of that is Medicare,
yeah.
Which has a 3% administrative overhead cost. Although not many people are happy with Medicare, it is a single-payer system.
It is a single-payer system that does fund a lot of people who do not. I mean, I'm watching a friend go through a whole illness and death who had not a penny to her name. the public health care system actually, she was so poor that it actually did work for her.
Mm-hmm.
The local transportation systems didn't because she could never get to her appointments, but
yeah.
The systems actually did get health care.
She did have access, yeah.
We're talking to Linda Siegel. Okay, so healthcare reform, the any other environmental?
Well, on healthcare reform, there are going to be other healthcare reform bills, mm-hmm. like creating, like a bill that was introduced last time to create a healthcare authority that would not really do anything yet, but would bring people together to try to develop a plan for how to do healthcare. So there'll be a lot of those. There'll be some consolidation bills. We'll continue to see health insurance reform. Till we actually do it.
Till we actually have health insurance reform. Ladies and gentlemen, let's talk about some of the terminology. We talk about this every year, but it's important for people who, when they hear that a bill was dropped, wonder whether that means that it's now on the floor or what.
When a bill is dropped, that means it was introduced. A legislator dropped a bill into the House, and that means that it got a number. It'll be House bill and a number, and that's how you look it up on the legislative website.
And what is a caucus?
A caucus is, there's the Democratic caucus and the Republican caucus. And so in both the House and the Senate, these caucuses meet, cuckeye, whatever they are. they meet periodically, and they theoretically decide strategies on bills. So the House Democratic caucus might get together and go, okay, we want to pass these six bills. And then they, you know, see who agreed and then try to go out and pass the bills and see who doesn't agree. And for whatever reason, if a person in the caucus can't agree to supporting a bill, then they try to find ways to protect that person. It's a good way for the parties to decide which direction they're going in the legislature.
What is a memorial?
A memorial is a piece of legislation that we lobbyists often use when we can't get a real bill passed. And so we try to get a memorial introduced and passed, and it's usually to study something. So we could do a memorial to study the number of school nurses that are actually needed to adequately serve a school district, and then report that back to a legislative committee after the study has gone on.
And so that's a precursor to getting a bill passed,
right,
in some future legislative session for more school nurses. Whatever.
Right. Then you might say, well, look, our memorial study showed that we really need to increase the number of nurses by 10 in every school or whatever it is by...
And does this memorial process work? Have you seen memorials go from being memorials to being bills?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's a common way of doing it. And memorials have to pass one, if it's a House memorial, it only has to pass the House, or Senate memorial only has to pass the Senate. If it's a joint memorial, it has to pass both chambers, but it's not signed by the governor. It just, the departments are told, go study this, and they normally do it.
And who actually then, when a memorial is passed, is required to do the studying?
Whoever's listed. So a school nurse memorial might have the Department of Health or Public Education Department charged with bringing all the players together and talking about it and then conducting the informational piece.
So then they actually have some extra work, which involves assigning people to do stuff.
Right. Unfunded mandates. That's what memorials
unfunded
are.
Unfunded mandates.
That yes.
They must love them.
Yes. The departments get a little sick of them sometimes.
All right. So all these bills that get written and get dropped and get debated and passed and not passed, who actually writes them?
Well, we have a number of really educated, qualified, well-trained people who sit on the fourth floor of the Capitol called Legislative Council Service. And they are the ones who draft the bills. If a legislator comes to them with an idea, okay, I want a bill on this topic, then those drafters have to look up the existing statutes, figure out what the legislator wants, and write a new statute to accompany whatever existing language there is, and then that's what the legislator introduces.
And these people up on the fourth floor, are they susceptible to bribery and corruption?
Absolutely not. They are nonpartisan. They are very professional. And in fact, you know, they can't even tell other legislators about the bills that one of their colleagues introduced or has asked to be drafted. Mm-hmm. And so they keep everything quite secret.
Now, one hears about bills being drafted by lobbyists and special interests. Does that happen here in New Mexico?
Absolutely. And what happens is we can take a bill to a legislator and say, here's an idea of something, and if you support it, then it would go to the drafter and still probably be tweaked and made sure that it's in New Mexico legislative statutory language. But a lot of bills are written by advocates and lobbyists and constituency groups.
And do the people on the fourth floor, if they see something egregious, what can they do? I mean, is there, if something is just clearly a egregious special interest kind of bill that's being introduced, do they have any kind of whistleblower things?
No, I mean, they do what the legislator tells them to do. Now, they do it within the constraints of, well, this may not be constitutional. Although
right.
we've passed unconstitutional laws before, but they would at
That's
least...
That's why we have the system of checks and balances.
That's right. But they would at least tell the legislator, well, this might not be constitutional, but we could go ahead and do it. But they try to waylay things that are illegal. But a legislator can pretty much introduce anything they want to.
So what happens then when a bill is written... It's dropped. Then there is a committee process. How does that committee process work?
Every bill, once it's introduced in a chamber, the appropriate people in that chamber, in the House, it's the Speaker of the House, in the Senate, it's the Committees on Committee, they decide which committees it will go to. So if it's a bill changing a statute, then you know that it's going to go to the Judiciary Committee in either chamber. And if it's a bill related to health and changing the statute, then in the House it's going to go to the Health Committee and then the Judiciary Committee. So every bill gets at least two committee assignments. If it has money attached to it, then it's going to go to the Appropriations Committee or the Finance Committee in the Senate to be heard, to be discussed with appropriations.
So some bills have money attached to them and some don't. So some bills say you must always put your dog on a leash and there's no appropriation necessary
right,
for that, which
right.
is the public has to go out and buy leashes.
Right.
But other ones are like things that actually require funding and
right.
that has to go to the Appropriations Committee.
Right. So if you have a bill for $1 million to expand domestic violence services, then that would go to the Appropriations Committee where it would die. because there is no money.
We're talking to Linda Siegel. One thing that we haven't talked about, which we tend to talk about every year, is water. Are
yes.
there any big water bills coming up?
Well, I imagine there are. I know that there is one issue that the state engineer is very concerned about, and that's that brackish water that I think they've discovered under Sandoval County. And because it's...
Brackish being sort of salty, sort of partly salty, partly fresh.
Yeah, and it's also very deep. I think it's like 2,000 feet deep. And the way the laws are is that the state engineer has no authority over water that's deep. I believe this is what the issue is. And so here's millions, maybe billions of gallons of water that the state engineer is going to have no authority over whatsoever to say, oh, you can only pump this much, or you can only
right.
drill these many wells. So I know there's going to be some legislation around that. Because Sandoval County, they don't really want any rules about it, but people who know that we have a shortage of water here and that we need to be planning
right.
Want to have some say. So that's one water bill. I'm sure that there are going to be others because the water issue has not gone away.
It has
we have not
indeed not
it.
Gone away.
Right.
We have indeed not solved it. And water is over-allocated and we are essentially mining water.
Right.
We're talking to Linda Siegel. Let's see. We have about... 7 minutes left.
Okay.
What do you want to let the people of New Mexico know?
Well, I think it's very important to pay attention to this. Every day in the newspapers, there will be articles about the kind of legislation that's been introduced. The Albuquerque Journal, the New Mexican, the Reporter, they're going to be reporting on the more controversial big issue bills. So it's good to watch those and to see what's going on and see if you want to get engaged. Your radio show, we're going to be giving updates periodically.
Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, right before 9 o'clock, probably 8:54 or 8:55, somewhere in there. We're going to be doing 5 minutes of legislative update Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
And this is an opportunity for people to know what's going on in the legislature. I mean, part of the problem is we elect these people and then we just stop paying any attention. And obviously, these 112 people and the governor have tremendous power. They set all these policies, make all these laws, dictate your life, decide what kind of taxes you're going to pay or not, decide how clean your air is going to be, how clean your water is going to be, what roads are you going to drive on, are they going to be filled with potholes or not, what are the school systems going to be like.
Whether you can go to a doctor or not.
Right, is there going to be health care for people? Critical issues, and we don't pay attention. So
and then we complain.
Right. Yes.
One thing that we haven't talked about is bills that are originated in the governor's office.
Yes.
They do that. So, in other words, legislators and their extremely ethical people on the fourth floor originate bills, but then so does the governor's office.
Right. The governor's office will write bills, and then the governor, of course, has to find someone to carry that bill because the governor doesn't carry bills on
right.
the floor of the House or the Senate. So they'll. Like there's going to be some domestic violence bills that both the governor's office and the attorney general's office want. Well, they can't support, I mean, they can support them, but they can't sponsor them, so they find legislators who will carry those bills and send out the word.
And all of that is happening here in New Mexico. What are some of the, I mean, you've been doing this for quite a while. What are some of the successes and some of the really good bills and good job that the legislature has done in the years that you've been doing this? What are you sort of most proud of when you look at our state?
Well, I think we've done some really effective environmental controls. We need more, but our air is still pretty clean in New Mexico, and we're working on the water issue. We've done a lot with DWI. In the early 90s, alcoholism, DWI was just rampant, and we started passing bills that started to make people accountable and provide more more punishment and hopefully more opportunity for people to stop driving while they're drunk.
You drink, you drive, you lose.
There you go. You've been watching those ads.
it's a pretty good slogan.
Yeah. We've done some good social policies from the perspective of gay and lesbian rights. In 2003, after 12 years, we finally passed non-discrimination legislation that protects people in employment, housing, credit, public accommodations based on sexual orientation, gender identity.
Did we ever pass a good payday lending bill?
There was a pretty good one passed in the prior year, but Lieutenant Governor Dinesh has got a new one because she feels like there were some loopholes in that, so we need to continue working on that. Part of the thing about the legislature is it's an incremental body. You pass one thing, you see how that works, and then you expand on it and make it better, hopefully.
Right.
So that happens.
One of the things we haven't talked about, and I still am getting up to speed on what's being introduced this year, but global warming and coal-based electricity are of extreme concern to pretty much everybody in the country right now, and certainly the people of New Mexico who get so much of our electricity from coal. Clean coal seems so far to be an oxymoron. Any legislation pending on that you know of?
Well, what happened in the last session was that coal-fired plant that was supposed to go up in the northwestern part of the state was voted down
right.
by the legislature, and that was a very positive thing. I don't know what proactive things are on the horizon for that.
And we will know very soon.
Yes,
and we will find out. We will find out very soon.
I mean, one of the things that we see in these long 60-day sessions is that, like, 3,000 bills and memorials are and constitutional amendments are introduced. Now, the legislature has passed rules that say we don't want you introducing the same bill in both the House and the Senate. So that's cut down on the bill numbers a little bit.
Interesting.
But so many bills, and maybe only 30% of them get through the process. 30 or 40% go through the full process of passing both the House and the Senate and getting on the governor's desk.
Just for the sake of full disclosure, what are you working on as a lobbyist this year?
Well, I'm working on some health care stuff for some of my nursing clients. We're going to do a health care whistleblower bill.
Really?
That would provide protections for any healthcare worker who reveals unsafe practices, violations of the law. We have no whistleblower legislation in New Mexico. There's been a state employee whistleblower bill introduced for the last couple of years, but it's gotten through, and the governor vetoed one because of some problems with it. So that bill is going to be introduced in our whistleblower. Doing some things for nurse midwives and OBs because their premiums are skyrocketing and we're losing birthing providers throughout the state. There are 10 hospitals now that don't have anything other than emergency birthing
services.
Good
heavens.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. So for child care providers, they're, you know, more and more people are needing child care, and yet we're looking at, are we going to have to cut the budget on that? Or are we going to be able to keep that budget at its current levels? The domestic partner bill.
Now, is there, I mean, we've just got a minute or two left now, but I mean, is there any fat in the system at this point? I mean, is there any fat to cut?
Well, I don't know. I'm sure there is fat, but I know that a lot of central programs are going to suffer. That the Medicaid programs, the health and social service programs, the programs that the nonprofits are out there doing, the domestic violence, the child care, the rape crisis, all those social programs that dramatically impact people's lives, they could see some cuts.
Linda Siegel is a lobbyist. She is our legislative update person who is with us every year during the legislature, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We used to do it right at the beginning of the show. Now this year we're doing it right at the end of the show. Linda Siegel, thank you so much for being here, and I look forward to connecting with you three times a week for the next couple of months.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte. See you soon.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can reach me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We are podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Marilyn LeBlanc for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Helga Ancona hosts Good Morning Jazz. Broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. We will see you tomorrow. Have a wonderful day. Ciao.